Hello, hello, and welcome to TechPoint Charlie. I'm Raz Shuti.
And I'm Yael Schweiger.
And this is our episode 8.
8, yeah.
8.
Correct.
Wow, talking about retrospective.
Yeah. So good morning to you.
Good morning, indeed. How are you, Yael?
I'm extremely tired.
No one can tell.
Yeah?
Well, at least I'm assuming none of our listeners, but...
Oh, we just told
I can see it in your eyes. And I'm afraid.
I can see it in your eyes. Anyway... all right, so today we're going to talk about retrospectives. And actually, so this is a part of, I guess, the Agile world.
Yeah.
And the reason we're talking about this is because I guess most of the teams these days do retrospectives because they follow some kind of an Agile process, either a Scrum or a Kanban or a mix or something that's different. But this is a tool that has been proven to be very efficient.
Yeah.
So many frameworks adopt it, and even if they don't, many companies just tend to take that tool and put it into their processes because it's just very effective when done correctly.
Yeah, basically, I guess you all heard that already, our listeners, those who actually listen to the episodes. I'm not high on Agile. Mm-hmm. I really kind of dislike the Agile movement and where it is today. I like the initial concept.
Well, it's very trendy now, isn't it?
It is, yes. No, but I think like the initial idea was great, but I'm really high on retrospectives. So yeah. I think this is one of the best things that came out of the Agile movement. And yeah, I love retrospectives.
Yeah, and I think we both agree that we like this tool, mostly because it allows in a very short amount of time to collect feedback from the team members in an unbiased way. That reveals a lot of insights and helps to organize and improve the process.
Yeah, like to follow the continuous improvement methodology or the small incremental changes.
Which maybe you can say something about.
I would love to.
Just in short.
But basically, I think as everything we're saying is also if it's done right. And one of the things that we actually are going to tackle today, and I think I really like the concept of letting our listeners know the motivation of actually... tuning in,
yeah,
is we're going to talk about how to do retrospective the right way. Well, there isn't a right way, but at least something that works for Yael and me.
I guess just some guidelines that can make it work for you better than just repeating mistakes.
Exactly.
And also, I'm a certified Scrum product owner, which means I did a certification in the Scrum method for my role. And also have done retrospectives since, my first day on the job.
Yeah.
And I've made most mistakes as well. And you're, as you said, you're high on that and you're kind of...
And also I'm old. So I haven't done retrospectives all of my career. So when I started working like 14 years ago in this industry or 13 years ago.
I think 13, yeah.
Yeah. And I started with Waterfall. We had no retrospectives, and we followed the waterfall process. And then I think in my fifth year or so, I worked in a company that moved to Agile, and then I saw retrospectives done wrong. And then with just like moving around from startup to startup, I actually also encountered retrospectives done right. So I have a lot of ideas and a lot of experience.
Yeah, and we're going to share a link with you that actually some guidelines that Raz made. That were very helpful also in my roles that I always take with me to my companies.
So, let's maybe...
All right, so let's
get
just...
down to business, yeah.
Yeah, so just, I guess, as a small recap. So what is retrospective?
So basically, retrospective is a ritual. It's a point where a team or a group of people, if they're working together, they pause quickly. Mm-hmm. They talk about what works well for them. They celebrate that. They talk about basically what are things that they like to preserve, what are things that are actually like keeping them motivated, and it's a way to basically just kind of celebrate it, but also spotlight it.
Mm-hmm.
But also, they talk about what anchors them, what actually, if they're a ship, what is anchoring them and not letting them continue on sailing for as fast as they can, or what is what are problems that they might have on their day-to-day. And so on the technical level, it's basically a meeting for every X amount of time, depends on the team, depends on what they decide to do.
Mm-hmm. Depends and on I think setup. It's encouraged if you have a sprint, then to do it each sprint.
Yes.
If you have a round of something, then each round of whatever it is.
Yeah, I think that works very well because it's also a good closing point and a starting point for a new one. So if you're talking about small incremental changes, it's nice to have like a measurable point where I start a new sprint, so I wrap up the old one. And so a nice way to also kind of discuss it.
Maybe we should address the main misconception about retrospective.
Yeah.
Which is, it's great to celebrate successes and it's a good place to vent sometimes or, you know, surface issues. But mostly it's to deal with the process of how you're working. So it's not to point out people and say, this was terrible or the weather is terrible or something like that or just everything's shitty. It's actually, to surface problems that are related to the process in order to try and change them.
Yes, it's really good to vent, don't get me wrong, but it shouldn't be a venting session where you just kind of shout into the air and nothing happens. It's action driven. So out of a retrospective, what you should have if you do it right, you need to have action items, and those action items should be carried over for the next retrospective that you can actually see that you've delivered them and you tried them out at least. So
and we'll talk about that on exactly what they should be.
Exactly.
All right, so let's, do it, minute by minute, or I guess, exercise by exercise.
Yeah.
So, how long should it be, do you think?
Basically, a good kind of rule of thumb for me is start with 45 minutes if it's the first time you're doing it for a 7-people team, and then see if it's too short, extend it to 1 hour, and if it's too long, just decrease the amount of hours. Just play with it. It depends really on the sum of people in the team, I guess. Mm-hmm. So if the people in your team will not be, I don't know, will have some problems, but nothing needs explaining, so it could be quick. Mm-hmm. And if the team is big and they have a lot of problems, like 1 hour could be even too short. So
or also maybe if the team was just newly formed, then you might need a bit more time to practice this. Or if this ritual is not something you've done before, they maybe give it a bit more time, but don't be tempted to make it too long because then everyone gets used to maybe a wrong practice of just talking about everything and every item and not doing it in short and to the point. And that's a distraction. That could be a distraction.
Yes. Okay. So let's say for the sake of our example, let's say a retrospective is a 45-minute meeting.
Yep.
How do you start at Yale then? What do you usually...
Well, if you have action items from the last retrospective, this is a good time to follow up. That kind of helps people get re-involved in the process, be reminded of what happened last time. But if you don't, then let's assume it's a first time for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then you just start with taking some time and taking a note of either you start with what's bad or what's new. And the interesting thing is, usually, I think most practices say start with the good things and then go to the bad. And actually, in the current company that I'm working with, actually the team had switched it. I hope they don't mind me saying that. But actually, they had a nice point in which they said, if we start with the good things and then we celebrate, it's nice. But then when we finish with all the issues, it kind of can cause a feeling of down instead of an upper, you know, at the end. So we actually tried it the other way around and it worked really well for us, which is, again, to encourage that this is a template that you can change.
Yeah, but you basically, the entire concept of the retrospective is you can change the retrospective and how it works during the retrospective. Everything is up for just changing and modifying. The idea is not assuming that the group of people that you work with is the same as the group of people I work with or Yael works with.
Right. But so, the principle that you should keep, I guess, is what we're trying to talk about now.
Yes. We're talking about what are the things that, well, could be also changed according to where you're at, but most of the time they work well for most cases.
And to avoid the traps.
So if I remember correctly, we had an episode talking about biases.
Right.
And in one of those, we were trying to think about a way to let people interact in a way that is unbiased. So
because, and this is one of those methods, right?
So yeah, but it depends. So we're talking about common mistakes is if you have a retrospective and you give people like just to talk by turns, and then people with the loudest voice will be heard, and those who are not good speakers will not, or they will just say whatever the other people, the more dominant people, will say. So a good practice here would be to take sticky notes and give 5 minutes and just let people write for themselves quietly. No one says anything. No one anchors opinion. Mm-hmm. And then you go one by one to the whiteboard and just stick your sticky notes and just explain what you meant. Mm-hmm. And that's for example, a good method to continue and doing those things without having the problem of introverts versus extroverts and how they communicate.
Group bias.
Or group bias.
When exactly. Someone says something and the others agree because many reasons psychologically, but actually, so this method of taking time and writing notes is something that you can do in any other type of challenge or meeting or problem or whatever you want to deal with. It's really good for avoiding biases, and also to pinpoint, because on a sticky note you cannot write, you know, a lot of sentences. You shouldn't do that, actually. I mean, you can technically take a pen and write it, but you should take like a marker or, you know, a Sharpie, and just write in a few words and big words that are readable as much as possible, so people can read what you wrote on the sticky note that is put on the board. And yeah, like I said, so we take a few minutes. Each of us writes how many sticky notes they want in a focused way. And then one by one, when we're done, when we make sure that everyone's done, because some people need a bit more time, only then we're allowed to talk, and then we, one by one, we put it on the board. And yeah. So you put the note up, you read it out loud to say exactly what you wrote there, but you can also explain. But the explanation shouldn't take more than a few seconds, like not more than, let's say, 10 seconds or something like that, just to keep it on the point, like to keep it on point. So you can, like, let's say I wrote, retrospective method is confusing, or method is confusing, then I put it on the board and I read this aloud, and then I say, yeah, I'm not really sure how to do this. We should maybe explain this, or I want to know if anyone else thinks like me. But we don't turn it into a discussion. So we continue on to the next sticky note, and later on the next person. And only after everyone had put their sticky notes up, then we move on to the next phase.
Yeah, and just to talk about focus, because you did say focused, So if we start, for example, with the positives, then we are only writing positive things. And then after we've done the round, we cluster. And we just, so that's the next phase, where we just take all the sticky notes randomly, just on a whiteboard or on a wall. And you just say, okay, this sticky note about what Yael said about not clear about the method of the retrospective is very similar to Raz's complaint about not understanding the concept of the daily and why we do that. So we can kind of say, okay, method's unclear about the process, or we can kind of cluster those.
Or we can disagree on that, and this is the time for a group discussion and say, no, these are both methods, but it's two different problems. Yael and two other people had pointed out something about the retro, and other people had pointed something about the daily, so these should be separate groups. Yep. And this is exactly where it's time for the people interaction in the room. Yep. And the point is to agree on what the topics are that are either problematic or like happy topics that we should celebrate.
Yeah, and another common mistake that I also did for a long, long time in my career, by the way, is very generic clusters. So having like a cluster called process, and then you dump everything there, makes it really tricky to then after that solve all the things inside, because they don't usually fit. So I would even say, like, it's something that I started relatively recently, is to try and make my clusters more clusters and more explicit. So if I have clarification,
so smaller problem, groups, you mean?
Yeah, smaller groups. So if I see
but
that there is
a clearer topic, I mean,
I still make a big process cluster, but then I cluster within. So it's kind of like,
well, maybe because people can't see our hand gestures.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
We should explain. So when we take the sticky notes and we put them into clusters, meaning groups of sticky notes, then we try to find the common title that we agree on as a group. And this is where usually there is a discussion. Again, try to keep it short. But in this sense, it's actually very important, because this is where you define what the common feelings are all about. Is it about the method? Is it about clarifying something? Is it about the interaction? Is it about something else? And some things kind of resolve themselves through this, and some things kind of surface a misunderstanding or how people feel about different problems or the same problem. And this is where you try to give a title to a group of sticky notes,
yeah,
basically. And then you, if you write something like process, yeah, that's good. But as Raz said, it's too vague. So maybe try to give it a better name, like saying daily stand-up is not efficient.
Yeah.
Or daily stand-up sucks. Or daily stand-up is boring. All those titles are super legitimate. So they can be as specific as you want and as candid as you want, as long as they hit the point and everyone agrees on them.
Yeah. And also you can use that for the positives as well, of course. Saying, for example, I really like, so the daily, a lot of people wrote for things about how they like the daily. So you can say, daily stand-ups are a place where I get a lot of information from, or I learn a lot from my colleagues on the daily stand-ups. So it's actually spotlighting the concept of, oh, we get knowledge sharing from the daily stand-up. So
and that's even very satisfying to have a specific title of what's the benefit for everyone that everyone enjoys.
And it also solves the common problem that I've seen in all the retrospectives that I used to do, where we had a cluster called process in the positives and cluster called process in the negatives, but we never distinguished what is working well or not. You need to kind of read all the sticky notes. So by actually just like making things more explicit, you say, oh, daily stand-ups are working very well for knowledge sharing, but in the negatives, daily stand-ups are too long.
Yeah.
And you can actually just see that happening. So, and then you can kind of try and play with that.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about documentation maybe a bit later on. Yeah. But if you choose to document this, and we recommend that you do, so you can see the progress a long time, those titles is something that stays, because then it goes with either the celebration or the action items. And if the title is self-explanatory, meaning it's a sentence or something that is super clear, not only in the moment, but in general, it means you can always look back. And I got to tell you, with, you know, the workload is hard, and you know that sometimes you look 2 weeks back into the past and you don't really remember why you wrote, and being very explicit and having good titles and full sentences on this really helps. So you can tell, oh, okay, in the last 2 weeks, actually, if we assume it's 2 weeks, in the last 2 weeks, actually, this has become better, whether we did something about it or not, because sometimes it's also about being aware of something. And the more specific it is, it can resolve itself also.
Yeah, and not everything is an action item. A lot of the things are just like to surface them and like we can't solve everything. So let's go to the action item part.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Yeah. So let's say the process was the positives, we took 5 minutes, wrote it on a sticky note.
We talked about the negatives, so let's take that and then talk about the positives.
So we did negatives, sorry. So let's say that we did negatives, wrote it on a sticky note, clustered.
Agreed
on the titles.
Now we look at it and we say, yeah, we have a common understanding of how things are at the moment and what is negative for us.
Yeah. So from the negatives, we would actually like to continuously improve, right? And a lot of the things that we want to do is to basically try and solve not everything, because remember, if you do it every 2 weeks, you still have your own tasks. It's also, this meeting itself is like, let's say, 45 minutes to an hour. It takes time for yourself, for you as a team, but you want to try and solve. So the idea is, as a unit, as a team, you always grow, you always change, and you always try some new things. So what you want to do in the end is to vote for things that you find as a unit, as a team, that is weighing in on you, and that you want to solve, or at least try, give it a try.
Right, because you can't solve everything, and if you do action items for everything over there that's on the board, then you're going to be working for the next 2 weeks to change a process, but not to actually
do your work.
Yeah, do your work. So the process is something that is supposed to support your work, and it's something that we want to continuously change and improve, but it's not the end goal. It's a means to an end.
Yes, you want the process to work for you, and you don't want to work for your process.
Right.
You just want to invest a bit in your process.
So just like everything else, we need to choose what we're going to focus on. And another good way to do that is by voting, silent voting.
Yes. So, yeah, I think what we do, for example, where I work, is we do dot voting, and you just go to the whiteboard or to whatever, and we have like those dot stickies where we just tape, or we just take a pen and we just, you know, draw on a whiteboard, and mm-hmm. In my team, for example, we want to diversify. We give people 3 dots per person, mm-hmm. and we basically say you can't have 3 of your dots in one cluster.
Right.
So you can't go all in. You can do 2, but you still need to choose another one. So you kind of have to diversify and say, okay, this is my number 1, this is my number 2. Mm-hmm. Or you can just say, I have 1 dot per cluster, and I vote for 3 different things. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to only vote for clusters, of course. If there is one specific thing that was unclustered, which is, by the way, okay, you don't have to cluster everything. Not everything needs to fit to a cluster. You can also vote for a single post-it that was there, and you feel like this is an issue you want to solve.
Yeah, even if it's within a cluster, I guess that's something you can decide on.
And you can decide on.
I mean, our rules at the moment is that if there is a cluster, then you vote for a cluster, and if there is a single node that is not a part of a cluster, then you can vote for that one.
Yeah.
But also, I've been into teams that you can vote for specific tickets if something is like a hot topic. Even within a cluster. But I guess that's something you should work for yourself.
Yeah, you can decide on that.
And this is also something that you can point to improve over time.
Of course.
The number of points as well. And I guess you can also do it where everyone goes to the board at the same time and put their votes. Or you can do it in a round where a person gets up, put on the votes and continue. That, however, can create a bias towards seeing what gets voted more. And then people sometimes can feel uncomfortable voting for something else. Or saying, it doesn't matter what I vote for, this one's going to win, I'm going to put my dot there. So there is maybe you can invent another way of maybe taking a node and voting, giving it numbers, and then...
We do give time. So we say, okay, think about it and think where you want to vote before mm-hmm. you go to the whiteboard. And then right. we just basically say, okay, now let's all get up and do it. So we try to do it simultaneously. And it works well also with remote people, because with remote people, we usually tell them, okay... think about it, and don't write it. Just write it to me, the moderator, and I'm just going to get up for you and put it so I can, people actually write to me in private. So you can find whatever, how many ways you can.
Yeah, maybe it's just a good to actually give a couple of tips for remote teams right here. I know it's kind of in the middle of everything, but since this is post-it based, then there are a couple of ways to do this that helps the rest of the team being involved. And again, it depends on the maturity of the team as a team and in doing this. And please try to remember that bias are there always, even if you're a team that had worked together for a long time. So try to avoid that. Okay, so what kind of thing can you do? So what I've done along the years, so there are some shared notes that you can do virtually. I guess if you write it along together, then you can see what people are writing before you continue, and that's not really the best for avoiding biases, but you can do that. Or maybe you can write your notes on your own, whatever, Google Doc and just post it at the same time. That's a good idea.
That's what we do, yeah.
Or I've also been to situations where remote people would write to a specific person, and then we would literally take a post-it, write it, and they can, read aloud what they wanted to say over the phone, and we post it on the board. However, for that, it's quite important to remember that not everyone can see the board, even if you have a camera, which could be a good idea if you want to point one camera to the team and one camera to the board, which works, not, amazingly, but it works. Then you need to be more specific when you talk about things and point them out with your finger or your words. And maybe take your smartphone, assuming you have one in the room, at least. I guess everyone has, at least in the tech industry. But then you just, if you have a chat or something, you can just take a photo and then send it in each step that you're doing. So once it's on the wall, once it's clustered, once it's voted on, and then people can actually take a look and see. And that really enhances the involvement of people.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, let's talk about why you create action items even. Why not just point out the problems and move on?
Well, if you point out the problems and move on, maybe in your team it works, but most places you go back to your work, you're no longer focused on your retrospective, you're focused on your daily tasks. You're focused on whatever you need to do, and you forget about those things. So by having action items, it's just something that is being piled on to some people who want to solve them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's part of what you need to do in the next iteration, right? Or if you do Kanbani, then whatever, the next time you meet in your retrospective. So yeah. For the time period. So it's basically a team commitment or a person commitment, depends on what you, the action item you created, to try something out. And it could be team-based. So for example, I don't know, if you're complaining that people are late for your daily,
yeah,
and you've made a decision that from now on, if you're late for your daily, I don't know, you...
bring food.
Yeah, exactly. Or something like that. And you say, okay, that would help or solve the problem. Then you try it for 2 weeks. And then you realize that the people who are late are still late. Though they don't have a problem. They should start bringing food when they're late now. And everyone else gains weight. Then you can come to your next retrospective and say, well, this didn't solve the problem. It just made it a bit more difficult. And now I'm 2 kilos heavier.
Well, you ate a lot, I guess.
Yes,
but I guess, so the action items is something that is supposed to orientate us towards. I mean, we assume that if we do this thing, then it might improve things in the direction that we want. Yeah. So maybe not solve the entire problem, definitely contribute to the solution or move it at least in the right direction.
Yes.
And when we review the action items and see whether we did them or not, whether they helped or not, it gives us, again, the focus to review our process and to think about the items that we want to talk about today in that context as well. So yeah, it could be a team commitment. So everyone does this, and it could be like one thing, like create this integration from whatever, Jira to Slack. And one person says, all right, I'll do that.
Yeah.
And then
it's super important that, we assign it to either the entire team or the entire whatever, or to a specific person. And by the way, it has to be something that you can do. And a lot of the problems there are like, oh no, it's a management problem.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't tend to take those. But remember, an action item could be surface this thing to the whatever, head of engineering.
Right.
Like this. And you can just, all you need to do is just do something to just kind of start a process for improvement. And that's also fine.
Yeah.
Don't try to fix the entire organization from your retrospective. Try to fix a very small thing that just in the end will actually improve your organization. Small incremental changes will actually be able, you'll be able to deliver them, and then you'll do it all the time. Then you'll always have small incremental changes, and those are easier to revert. Why am I saying that? So for example, let's say you did a daily thing and you've made a decision to bring food if people are late. And then after 2 weeks, you see that it didn't solve the problem. Those who are late are late. And just brought food. And it's easier then to revert that in 2 weeks or 4 weeks than to invent a new process and try and you say, oh, let's move from Scrum to Kanban and we're going to do all the other things. But what you wanted to solve is just people not just being on time on the daily. And this to revert this could be extremely more dangerous and tricky.
Yeah, so you basically say, all right, this small thing that we tried did not take us in the right direction, so we revoke it, let's try something else.
Yes,
it did, and great, let's continue with that.
Yeah, you basically want to start, when you start your retrospective, let's say this is iteration two, you go over your action items, and you say, okay, we did those action items, or we haven't, which is also fine, but then you need to decide if you want to or not, and you need to answer those questions. Did this action item work? Yes. Then do I want to implement it in my process? That means that from now on, this is what we do. Or do I want to try it another time, for example, and then take it to the next retrospective? Because we need more than 2 weeks to just assess if it works well or not. Or it didn't work, and then we just dump it.
Or we didn't do it, and then you can ask yourself,
why?
Yeah, why? Is it, do we still want to do this?
Yeah.
Did we just miss it? Or is it because we don't really need that, and that action item was more, I don't know, an idea that we feel we don't think is valid anymore.
Yeah, it's a lot of the times you need to kind of take into account that venting is part of this meeting.
Yeah. And some action items are venting.
Action items are venting, and it's fine. And if you don't tend to do those, and those action items always drag along and no one touches them,
just learn from it and
maybe they're not important. Yeah. Okay.
And I think there are a couple of pitfalls in terms of action items, and let's talk about those. So one of the pitfalls or the mistakes, I guess, that people often make is when you're doing retrospective, if it's a positive experience, even talking about the problems, you feel like you can fix everything.
Yes.
And that's what Raz had just said. Don't try to fix everything. This is why we vote on the two or maybe three big topics, could be even one. And you focus on what you want to change there. And just focus on that. You can't do everything. Another thing is that the action items should be something that you can achieve and do in the next 2 weeks.
Or iteration, sure.
Or iteration. Yeah. Let's call it an iteration. It's just, I think, the most common one is like 2 weeks at the moment with Scrum processes. But yeah, in iteration. And in that, you have to take into account the workload, what you have coming up.
Yes.
To actually think about it, not make like, all right, we're going to change completely like our test framework or processes. It doesn't happen in one iteration, no matter how long that is. You're supposed to have a few of those. That's the point of iterations. And so just think small but efficient. Try to pinpoint the problem and say, what is the biggest pain at the moment and what could help it move forward? And it could be a few things. It could be one action item. It could be five. But what would help it move and kind of relieve that pain a little bit? And as Raz said, it could be like to surface it to a manager and say, all right, so Raz is going to talk to that manager about this problem and
try to get an answer till the next retrospective.
Right. Or if you have, I don't know, a scheduling problem of some sort, find a person who would be responsible for that. Yeah. You don't have to then find the person in the room at that point. You just have to make the task, make it clear, and assign it.
Yeah, think about things about our life. Even life changes are not happening by a single big decision. They happen on very small decisions. So you will not become a marathon runner from a couch potato by just deciding you're going to run a marathon tomorrow. Yeah. You need to make a decision tomorrow morning to wake up when your alarm rings and then to go for a, I don't know, maybe if you're a couch potato, probably a 15-minute walk and jog and then eat right. And then the next day, another small change, and then you will implement some bigger changes. So the idea is you start, for example, in the beginning of the year with small incremental changes, and by the end of the year, you have a different process. So you didn't overhaul it in just a decision, but your process grew according to your needs. And why is it important also? It's because team changes, and the team is an immutable object. Basically, every person in the team donates to the team culture. And once you remove a person or you add a new person in, it's a new team completely. So by doing this, you always fit the process and what you do as a unit according to the people there.
All right, so another pitfall or mistake that is commonly done is that the action items are not working towards a change in the process.
Yes, the idea is how can we learn, how can we evolve, how can we grow? And if the action item doesn't lead to that, it's probably something that you should surface to your manager anyhow, which is good. But what you want to find in a retrospective is more kind of root cause-y type of thing.
Right.
So
it could be that we're talking about a topic and something surfaces and we wanted to address it with an action item, but actually there is nothing specific. It was more the discussion. In that instance, supposedly the manager the engineering manager or the product person or whoever is in charge should kind of raise their hand and say, you know what, I don't think we need an action item here, but I take it into my notes and we're going to talk about this either, you know, after this meeting, or you and I and that person, we're going to talk about it right after or next week. I'm going to set up an appointment. By the way, setting an appointment to talk about something deliberately is also an action item. That's also fine.
Yes. Another pitfall, actually, just coming out of this, is personal issues.
Yeah.
Retrospective is not a place to just basically dump your problems on someone else or to blame anyone. So it's very important to do, or at least what we try to do is to do a nameless retrospective where we don't mention people, but we mention how something felt for me. So I didn't like it when I went to the daily and I found myself there alone and I had to wait 10 minutes after the daily. So everyone showed up. This is something that happened to me. This is how I felt when it happened to me. So it's more, it's not blaming. That's like, Yael, you were late to the daily, which is very, very aggressive and blameful. Because I don't know why Yael was late for the daily, and also it's really hard to do those things, and it's not leading to any improvement in any way. So it's really important to kind of start saying, okay, how I felt when something happened to me, to do a very blameless retrospective, and also if you do have problems with a colleague, it's normal and it's fine. a retrospective is not the right place to solve it. I would say one-on-one with your manager and talking about those things, and then let your manager maybe do some conflict resolution between you and another team member, is a better place than to have the entire team involved. And if there is an employee specifically or a colleague of yours that no one gets along with, most likely your manager already knows, but surface it to your manager as a team. Don't do it in a retrospective, because that's not going to lead to improvement. Yeah. It's just going to basically, it's like throwing grenade in a room. So
yeah, so people would feel that they're being, so it's a ganging up on someone.
Yes, and that's not what you want. What you want in a retrospective is to continuously improve. You don't want to basically just kick someone out of your team because of a retrospective.
And it's supposed to be a safe space.
Yes, it is.
So it's okay. I mean, sometimes there is, you know, one person who's always late or one person who always whatever, and that's okay. But if you point to that person, it's not going to solve your problem anyway. So it's not just to say, you know, politically speaking, don't name names. It's actually the mindset of what actually is the problem. So it doesn't matter if it was Raz or Yael or someone else. What's really bothering me? Is it that I'm late for, like, is that someone is late for stand up?
Yeah.
Or is it a sense of disrespect of some sort? Is it a sense of no commitment? And say those things, and people would relate to that better. And also sometimes people don't know. So it could be that someone's late because they have, you know, something important that happened outside the office.
Yep.
There is a problem. I don't know, something at home, whatever. And things that you can't necessarily know. Or that person is not, you know, super sensitive to being... Or that person just is not aware that it's bothering you. And in that sense, if you focus on the problem, it lets that person respond either in the group by saying, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know it was a thing, I'm going to work on that. Or by then going to the manager and saying, you know what, that person can go and personally say, you know what, I have this problem and maybe we can work it out.
Yeah.
Or change the time of the stand-up. And,
exactly.
And then not even touch, you know, personal issues there.
So, for example, I had that exact case where I worked that... A new team member joined the team. We used to have our daily stand-ups at 12, at 11. We moved it to 12 for him because he was really struggling waking up in the morning. And even that didn't really work well for us. Everyone was really angry because we moved our daily stand-up 1 hour later. So we were like, why isn't he there? But then we realized it doesn't matter. What matters is we'll have a daily sync. And he just shows up later. So we moved our daily stand-up to 4 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
So we did like end of the day kind of daily stand-up.
Right.
And he was super engaged and he just actually really liked that. And he was super happy that we actually made something work for him as well. And we didn't try to force him to do something that we wanted. And the entire team, they just wanted to have the stand-up. It's just like a way to sync.
Yeah,
it
so
has
that's
a lot
really
of
good
other
example.
Problems, but basically it was like a way to say... What's important for us? Is it the time of the day of the daily stand-up, which could be, by the way, like if you need to really think in the morning, like about what you're going to do in the day, or if you have, like we had a setup that we were working on some things and it didn't really matter if we were thinking in the morning or the evening, and we just did end of the day sync.
Yeah, so that's the point of pinpointing
exactly.
What's the trouble and not the
and
person.
And then what will be the solution
exactly
that fits the common, like the common part, yeah.
So another common mistake is when you have tasks or action items and then one person assigns it to people. That's okay if that's how you want things to work in your team, but usually that's not the most positive.
No, I would say people should volunteer.
Yeah.
And by volunteering, you're actually engaging yourself in the process and in the continuous improvement. So... And if, like, someone assigns this to you, then it's just another task that you need to do,
right. Or
your manager or someone told you that you have to do. But if you're engaged, you're engaged, and this is a way to get engaged. And I think this is also, we talked about in our culture episode, where processes are there to support cultural change.
Yeah.
So if you want people to be engaged in continuous improvement, one of the things that we need to do is to allow them to be, to engage themselves into it.
And if you yourself want to influence the process or the culture, then you can pick the things that are more interesting for you.
Exactly.
Or that you want to influence more, and that way you can get more engaged.
Yeah, and if, for example, you don't really care about human interaction or you find it annoying, but there is a technical process thing that could, like, if you want to try continuous integration in your team and you don't like your deployment process, right? your technical deployment process and you want to try to do continuous integration and in the end continuous delivery. Yeah. So you can actually say, okay, I'm willing to do the research, and then next week I'm gonna give maybe some solutions that we can actually start looking into. Or like I will do the initial research to say, okay, I'm going to come up with two, maybe three different products that we can actually take a look at, because I'm going to just disqualify what doesn't fit.
Right.
And this is something I can do.
True. But the point is not to, I guess, not to customize the action item to you or to your purpose.
No, just to choose what you want to tackle.
Right. But if the point was improve the continuous integration or change something, then you can say, this is what I offer that I can do. Yeah. Or if it was more specific and you just say, I have interest in that, then I'm going to do that. That's another mistake that is commonly happening with action items. And that is that when you start creating action items, you create ones that are not trying to solve the problem. Just because there is space and conversation. So try to focus. And whenever you decide on an action item, then look back and see if it solves the problem or helps promote for a solution.
Okay, so we talked about that. I think we haven't really touched upon the good things.
Yeah, let's talk about
it. It's always kind of get lost in the shuffle of all those things. It's really important to do the positives as well, because you want to spotlight what you've done well. And you know something that I do, for example? I do keep a document of all, basically, the retrospectives. And every 3 months, every quarter, I take a look at the past retrospectives and I summarize them. And I send it to the team, which I think it's super fun, because you basically say, hey, we started with a lot of process issues around the daily. And after 3 months, it seems like we don't complain about dailies anymore. But we did add a lot of positives about what we tried in the daily and it works. But new things that came out of that would be now we have problems with, I don't know,
this and that.
And it's a way to just basically summarize the last quarter. And to give people like an idea of, oh, this is what happened, this is what's going on, and this is where we improved on, and this is a problem that we keep on surfacing, but we never touch.
Yeah.
What is the reason for that?
Yeah, I think it's a good idea also because the processes change all the time. There is no end point to that. Like you never reach an end. And the reason is because the reality changes, the requirements change, the team changes, the workload changes, the focus changes. And in that sense, that's why we would always have that. There would never be a time, or I think there would never be a time, where you say, you know, we don't need to look back at our process and improve it.
Yeah, and maybe the improvements would just become smaller, but doesn't matter, because whenever you add a new person, the dynamic changes.
Yeah.
Whenever let's say your team is working on a new project, dynamic changes according to also what you work on. So everything always changes. And
it's good processes to see that summarizes
over
time, to see that things are actually moving.
And I try to look at the process like a product by itself. So if a product is always growing and always changing and always evolving, your process should do the same thing to adapt to how you work. And like we do with products, we do a demo where we actually celebrate what we've done. A nice thing to do is to actually do the same with the process. So every queue, it's a nice way to say, hey, we started with this, and now we're this, and we can see the reasons. We can see, we had new people joining in, or we started working on a new product, or we started, I don't know, having problems with our deployment system where we didn't have before.
Yeah.
We grew, we shrank, we whatever. But
or at least like, look, this was a shift. Like, this was a problem. It's not a problem anymore. Now we're focusing on this. And it kind of gives people this continuous feeling of
change
and involvement, and we actually managing to influence things.
Yeah, so basically,
but let's talk about celebrating successes though, because that's where we started with this.
So yeah, it's super important to celebrate successes, and because if we just do retrospectives where it's a lot of action items and where we can improve, and it's always feeling like, it's always talking about improving. Everything is shitty is a very, very bad feeling for people, and we are all human beings in the end. So it's super important to actually just talk about what works well. And we need to remember that we as a unit, even if we have problems, whatever we've done till now is amazing. I worked with a team where they had so many problems, but then I surfaced the fact, but you delivered so many things, but they've never discussed it. They forgot all the great things they did together because they always were talking about how their process wasn't working for them. And when I just, as an kind of outsider, as a person who joined the team as a new person, said, wait, even though all those process problems still delivered on time on those things, you still actually managed to deliver that product and you delivered it with a high quality of code, and it, all those things while still having this chaotic feeling, that's kind of amazing. And they never discussed it because they were all just always kind of looping around their process and where things are not working well.
Yeah.
So it's super important to have this feeling because we are doing some good things, and, yeah. and it's super important to just say it out loud.
And it's amazing because I think if you have a team that's very involved, actually it could very well be that the bad part or what's anchoring us would take the longest in that conversation of whatever, 45 minutes to an hour.
Yeah.
And that would give a sense of a feeling that, you know, that's the main things that yeah. are happening right now. But no, it actually means that you're working well as a team and there is a lot of psychological safety, like we talked about in the culture episode, that
yeah.
you, in the sense of trust, of
enables you to talk about the things that are not working well and that you want to influence and change.
So you should take that time and pause and ponder and do the sticky notes for the good things in even the clustering, and then celebrate it, whether it's with a high five or smiles all around or clapping to yourself or whatever.
And summarizing it in the end, which
yeah.
is great. Yeah,
true.
Summary is good for celebration.
And you can also share this. So if you document your retrospectives, which we recommend,
yeah.
Not to the most details, but maybe like take photos of the notes,
clusters, yeah.
the clusters, or maybe if it's very sensitive, decide what should be on there, maybe the titles and the action items, for example, or specific examples that contribute to the understanding and the improvements. But the celebration is something that you should definitely keep note of, and this is something that you can also publicly share. You know, and I don't know if Raz, you were on vacation for the last, whatever, 2 weeks or a month, because it's whatever, July, then you can also come back and see that and see what your team had done, or as a manager, what the teams have talked about recently. And that
yeah.
helps to surface the good things and the bad.
Yeah, that sounds perfect. So I think a good way maybe to continue from here is, first of all, let's kind of quickly summarize our I don't know, suggestions. Try to do a retrospective at the beginning or at the end of an iteration. So when you start a new iteration, start with some action items to the iteration so you can continuously improve. Try to do a nameless retrospective where everyone try to talk in an I language how things felt for them. Celebrate your positives, spotlight them. Cluster your positives as well. Try to cluster in a meaningful way, not in a generic writing process and just dump everything there.
Yeah.
Try to cluster your things in an explicit way.
Don't forget the remote people.
Don't forget your remote people, exactly. Try to find a process that works for them in a retrospective as well. That's great. Remote people tend to complain about how meetings don't work for them remotely.
Yeah. Because they're not included, which is
yeah.
something that can be a topic in a retrospective, and there are ways to solve.
Exactly. So celebrate your goods, put your positive or negative in an order however you feel like if you want to end with the positives, do that. If you want to end with the negatives, do that. For me, for example, ending with action items is easier. I'm very action driven,
mm-hmm.
but I think for other people could be that ending with the positive notes after you already created action items for negatives is a positive thing. Whatever works for you, that's what's important. It needs to work for you. And create action items that you can actually try, test, and deliver until the next retrospective.
Yeah.
And you need to also commit to doing those.
Yeah. And be creative about the action items. They don't have to be just of one kind. They don't have to become tasks. They have to just work for you and try to solve what you think the problem is.
Yeah.
So yeah, maybe we should consider doing a retrospective at some point to us. I mean, I guess we're doing this informally, but it could be interesting to do this like we just now suggested. And maybe you can we can also share that.
Yeah, we can do like a live recording episode where we do a retrospective.
Yeah, maybe.
And just cut off, maybe we could just cut the blanks part.
Yeah, so you don't have to sit and down and listen to 5 minutes of nothing of us writing on Post-its.
Yeah.
However, we are going to link some best practices and like a guideline document of what we were talking about. I think this time we were talking about like a lot of things, maybe in a more like a messy way or a more like insights driven way, but we are going to share a document that shows you bit by bit what we recommend on how to do retrospectives. Again, we're not like Scrum experts or something. This is
no, I'm not a Scrum person at all. Okay, so thank you all very much.
Yeah.
I hope you enjoyed this.
Let us know if you have any specific questions. We would be happy to answer them.
Yeah, and thank you for... So last episode, we got like 4 questions. I think the one before, we got some also like 3. So thanks for being engaged and keep on listening. And just let us know if there's anything that you want us to talk about or any questions that you have for us. So we can maybe even, don't know, create an episode that answers something that you want to listen to.
True. And you can always find us.
Yeah, you can always find us. No, it's perfect. Yeah, you can always find us on Twitter as techpoint_C or Facebook, techpointcharlie the group, or LinkedIn as techpointcharlie. Basically, we're all over the place. You can also write in our contact page on our website, which is techpointcharlie.blog.
And I guess see you next time.
Yeah, bye-bye.